lobbying and pressurizing?
I don't think, of course, the minister is a politician. He gets a large number of requests. But whatever the requests are, the routine order is GFR report. And then it goes through the normal process.
What about the question of interference at land countries? To what extent do MPs try to influence these?
That's rather a very difficult question to answer.
So actually, I was told on fairly good authority that here they tend to be careful in that if they support one church, the other people will.
Yes. Whatever is done very
quietly.
Quietly.
To what extent do DLOs and say even in your days, in AGA, did you get reliable information about the various candidates? Presumably you had to depend.
This is all done in public. You see? So that, in fact, now the system has been further amplified. The entire inquiry is held in public and the merits of each man are inquired into and it is open to anyone. The MP himself is invited. Representatives of local organizations like World Development Societies are invited. And the people themselves are there. So if any man gives any wrong information, it is up to the people to object. Then they have a final chance. The final selection also is put up for public information. And again they have a chance of lodging any objections.
And do many petitions come?
Yes, yes.
In fact, in your experience, did you find that at these countries, people step forward and said that is not true and things like that?
You know, actually how it works in practice is, particularly the days that when we held land countries, with the old headman system and the retumatinas and so on, no one dared pull a fast one. No one dared pull a fast one on the officer.
Why?
Why, there is a headman there. There is a Korala there. There is a retumatina there. All the village elders are there. How can you pull a fast one and get away with it? There may be stray cases when a man tried to say something, but at once the headman would correct him.
But what if the headman was in collusion and there was a bit of a sort of family
conflict? Oh, there may be, you can't rule out that once in a way, but it can't be on a large scale. It can't be on a large scale because even if they kept quiet at the land kachari, after I went back I would get a petition. And that would give me an opportunity to go into the matter again.
And then their position is...
They may even send an anonymous petition, but we still look into that. So that the chances of getting away with wrong representations are not very much. Even now with the Grama Savaka system, as long as the local representatives of the Rural Development Society and others are present, they would normally reach out.
What about oppression by this SLDO colonization officer levels? Oppression of the allottees and of the villagers, you know.
In what sense are you talking?
Well, they can victimize people, they can harass them, I presume, in numerous ways.
I you know, nowadays the villager is not so ignorant and long-suffering as he was perhaps long ago. He is conscious of his rights. And if there is any injustice done, he does not hesitate to go right up to the minister. So that there may be some stray case, but as a rule, there is no question of oppression nowadays.
To jump into another aspect, namely advanced alienation, what success did they have?
It was done for a good reason.
That means?
It was done for a very good reason because it was found that the moment government started restoring a tank, large number of squatters came and squatted on the land. With the result, there was no orderly development. People who really deserved the land did not get the land. It is more the adventurous type. Therefore, it was really, this advanced alienation was really an effort to arrest indiscriminate encroachments. But in the net result, we have found that it doesn't work at all successfully. And on the other hand, it was sort of hardship on the people to whom land is given in advance. Very often due to the delay in the functional irrigation process. Therefore, we have now confined the alienation, advanced alienation to 1 year. That is, within 1 year of the colonists being put in land, on the land, you ought to get your water for a spell.
But does that happen? Can
now it has happened. Now we are imposed that.
You mean the irrigation department is now...
Actually, in practice, the irrigation department has 2 years. Because you can't have successful irrigation without stamping and leveling. And the peasant will take more than a year to stamp and level his land. So in theory it is 1 year, but in practice we have 2 years to provide irrigation facilities. But there have been cases where a number of years they have not got water.
That's where the advanced irrigation failed.
And the government has been committed to paying large sums of money by year subsistence.
But why couldn't they take a simpler road to
arrest the encroachment?
Yes.
You see, filing innumerable cases against peasants is not a very popular move in a democratic form of government.
Does government agent have the power to summarily evict people?
Yes, go to court. The forest ordinance has been suitably amended. Yeah, instead of the normal long drawn process, by summary procedure in magistrate's court, a person can be evicted.
Oh, that's a more recent thing?
More recent thing.
When was that?
At the last year at the law.
In fact, apart from LDO, allotments and colonization schemes, don't you think that encroachments and squatting has gone on to a rather dangerous extent in Ceylon?
It is rather assuming alarming proposals. But, you know, there is one other aspect about encroachments. Encroachment is not something that, except those cases where mudalalis organize these things or some adventurers come and get hold of the land for resale. This is really a symptom of a disease. That is, namely landlessness.
Population pressure?
Pressure. It really means that the pace of alienation has not kept pace with the demand for land. That is the real fundamental cause for encroachments. And there is another reason. The present the forest reserves were demarcated and proclaimed during the early British period. And they have not been, boundaries have not been revised since then. It is only last year that our minister decided, directed, that all the boundaries, all the forest reserves should be re-examined with a view to making sufficient land available for local needs of peasants. And that is now being done. So I think, very special measures have been taken to regularize encroachments. Nearly 200,000 acres have been encroached upon.
Very special measures mean?
Means we have appointed BROs as district land officers, and we have provided additional clerical staff. We have provided extra surveyors to survey these encroachments, and we have made arrangements to give them permits.
In fact, isn't the survey department one of the bottlenecks?
Not now. Under the new survey general, work is proceeding very fast. Actually, in most areas, ahead of time.
Is this simply because of a change?
No, the cadre has been increased, and also he is also, I must say, a very efficient young and energetic.
In fact, one of the problems with ADO tenures has been this gap in the service, hasn't it? Permittent ground switch?
Now we get the other way about it. The survey nonetheless sent a large number of landmarking plans with all the lots landmarked, but the land officers haven't time to hold the grant kacharis and to issue the grants.
But formally it was...
Formally it was the other way around, that's quite true.
Oh, that's very interesting. Since when has the change taken place? 65, 66 or...?
About that point, 65. And that's also another thing I must give you all the time. Before the GA can apply for the title plan, as they call it, and the lease and the grant, all arrears of payment should be made, premium and all that.
So
even if the GA is willing to hold the grant kachari, unless a man is willing to pay his arrears, he can actually make a formal application for the title.
Why is it to be the GA? Why shouldn't it be the DLS?
No, but again, when I mean the GA, it includes all his officers. He has the same powers.
In fact, then in the long run, the longer the fellow has to wait to get a grant, the more he has to pay.
Well, that is the cycle in which he is caught up. So we are trying to take some measures by which we can write off annual payments before 1963 and enforce the payment for the current year and recover the last 3 years' payments on installment basis. That is the cabinet paper we are now preparing.
But these payments are fairly nominal, aren't they?
They are nominal. It's really due to a variety of reasons we have not been, the enforcement has not been very strict.
What about liaison in the field, in the opening out of colonies? Question of liaison between the
various departments.
Yes.
There is a standing committee on land development, of which previously the land commission, presently the permanent secretary is the chairman, in which all the departments connected with development are represented. Mm-hmm. So the program is drawn up well in advance and the implementation is also followed up.
Now, for instance, in the case of Chandrika Vela, apparently I think there was...
No, there what happened was, a contractor had defaulted. You see, in the anticipation of provision of irrigation facilities, people, colonists have been settled on the land. Then one contractor defaulted and he went to court. The department was in a terrible pickle. Then the Honorable Minister ordered that the river bridge should be closed with the earthen land. It was done about 2 or 3 years ago. And now things are all right.
Mm-hmm. I was wondering whether, in your experience, for instance, you have seen colonies and colonies improve economically. Say, taking the old colonization schemes, has the individual economic condition of the peasantry there improved?
Large number of cases, I can say it has improved. But of course, where the families have been too large and where the colonist himself is addicted to various bad habits, they are always in a poor condition. But otherwise, the generality of colonists, their condition has improved.
Mm-hmm. Now, does the Paddy Lands Bill also come under you, sir?
No. Mm-hmm. It comes under the Ministry of Agriculture and Food.
I think if I'm going to do a study, I have to get the structure very clear.
You know, there is another person whom you might meet. He's not here at the moment. He's out of the island. So J.P. Fonseca. He was in Commissioner of Agrarian Services for a number of years. He was my assistant in the land development department. He is now permanent secretary industries. He is abroad. He will return very soon. I wish you discuss the matter with him also. He will be very useful.
How far has the pedalines been operated?
I think better you ask them because I am not directly in touch. Mm-hmm. We hear all kinds of reports about it. I would rather not like to comment on something which I am not directly familiar with. But it is still in its inception, formative stages.
Well, I have a whole lot of other questions to ask. Unrecorded section of interview. When I said that of the other subjects I wish, when I mentioned some of the other subjects I wish to raise at the next interview, and mentioned that I was interested in their period of training while they were cadets, he interrupted to say that one of the good things one of the virtues of training in those days was that they were taught to take responsibility. They were given responsibility and encouraged to use their judgment responsibly. Another thing was that administration was not treated as a question of files, but as something concerning humans, persons, the personal factor. The human factor was kept in the forefront. I inquired whether he wouldn't have liked some theoretical training as well as the O&M methods of the present days. He agreed quite positively that this sort of thing would also have helped. I commented that people speak of British traditions and of the British traditions being maintained in the CCS, and asked him to explain what he considered to be the chief attributes of these traditions. After some thought, he said discipline and loyal service to whoever was in power. They would therefore even serve their ministers with complete loyalty. They would advise them. They might even advise them, render advice that went against the minister's policy, and try their utmost to persuade the minister. But if that advice was not accepted. It was their duty to carry out this policy as efficiently as possible. I inquired after any other characteristics which he would assign to those days, and when he hesitated, I prompted him by asking if there was if paternalism was one such attribute. He said that he was inclined to disagree with the term and commented that we were of the people and one with the people. And interested in their needs, and that therefore this phrase did not describe their attitudes. Since he had obviously, he was obviously talking about the Ceylonese officers of the present day, I chipped in and said, no, what about the British ones, the outsiders? As far as I can recall, and my memory is weak on this point, he said that of course the colonial system prevailed in that day. But they were all interested in the needs of their people and according to their lights did their best to fulfill, to satisfy these needs. I commented that the GAs and EJs of the old were and this went for Ceylonese GAs of that time too, were vested with considerable authority and had aura of power and prestige. And I wondered how close they were to the people. I inquired if there wasn't a gap between them and the people. After some thought, he nodded and agreed and said that he thought that could be said. But qualified by this, by saying that some of them, such as C.L. Vikramasinghe, that this could not be said of some of them, such as C.L. Vikramasinghe and V. Kumaraswamy. I then pointed to our earlier conversation when we said that, when we agreed that in those days they went out on circuit and lived more in the villages, and this would suggest that they did get to know the needs of the people. He said, he answered that there was nevertheless a gap that the people did not respond as they do now to the GAs and AGAs. Though he did not use the word, what I am quite certain that what he meant was that in there was much less identification between the mass of villagers and the GAs of those days. He added that he stressed that all the Britishers were concerned about the needs of the villagers. I asked him if there were any British officers of the late 30s and 40s who struck him as being personalities and particularly able officers. He searched his mind for a while and with some hesitation mentioned the names of Mulhall, Wedderburn and Davidson. I then asked him who he had served under in Kurnagala and he said it was Rogerson. And Rogerson had him to tea on the first day that he was in Kurnagala, and there he gave him one bit of advice, valuable advice, which he always remembered. Rogerson had told him, be most careful on a busy day. He had kept that in mind, and sure enough, a few weeks since, when he was going through vouchers, he came across a voucher in which an erroneous figure involving quite a large sum had been inserted. And he spotted it and was able to correct it. And that had been a busy day. That advice had stood him in good stead. I inquired if Rogerson was approachable. He said that the convention was that a cadet could approach a GA at any time. Of course, there was a gap of generations and the GA had, and the cadet was aware of his inferior station. But it was the duty of the GA to see to the cadets' training and advancement. I inquired if the DAs of old tended to treat the state councillors with some sort of disdain. He answered quite positively that this was not so. On the contrary, they paid them a fair amount of respect. State councillors of those days were not like the MPs of today, he said, smiling. They were men of the same class and in any event, they were not inclined to, they did not interfere much. I inquired if the younger officers he came across today were less inclined to take responsibility. He did not think so. They were quite good. And they were given very similar Hello? Train. Good night. But I didn't point to the fact that the environment of today was different and that there was more political interference, and that this might have led them to, led people to share responsibility and pass the buck. I'm afraid I cannot remember his answer to that one. Perhaps he refrained from giving an answer. I began to ask him a question about what was beginning. I commented that there was a controversy as to what was best for modern administrative service. The British system of a generalist, at which point he interrupted to say, they were now thinking of adopting the British system, that is, to give, to let young officers serve in different posts for about 10 years, as is general today, but then afterwards to specialize in one ministry and rise within that ministry. This is something they were thinking of, or they were in the process of implementing, or thinking of implementing. In this way, it would be possible for people to concentrate on spheres which suited their special aptitudes. Previous to this, there was no such plan. It was, for instance, a pure accident that he had settled in the Ministry of Agriculture and Lands in a sphere for which he, this was implied, had a special interest and aptitude. I commented that one of the problems, obstacles in the way, obstacles in to this plan was that people went in search of better pay and were willing to take any old job in any sphere as long as they got, as they advanced their economic position. He said that under a well-defined scheme, this could be provided for, and added that after all, the national needs were the primary consideration. I then got back to my earlier question and asked him what he thought of the highly specialized, technically oriented American type of training, and he as against the British generalist training. He said he was not in a position to comment on this because he was a product of the he was not in a position to be impartial or objective on this point because he was a product of the British generalist training. I then inquired what his degree had been in. It was in English civics. No, it was in English, economics and Tamil, but he had read law and anthropology for the civil service exam. In fact, he had been at law college when he sat for the exam. I commented that this was interesting and asked him whether his study of anthropology would have and commented that his study of anthropology would have been of some assistance later on in the service. He agreed wholeheartedly and added that he had enjoyed Malinowski's works in particular. Apart from their contents, they were very well written and enjoyable reading. I also made inquiries about the relations between the minister, permanent secretary, and heads of department. And he said that the permanent, the minister had to send his directives that the permanent secretary was a link between the two. But I inquired whether this wasn't merely theory and whether in fact, in practice, the ministers quite often, perhaps even for good reasons, went directly to the heads of departments and gave them directives, etc., etc. He said if this was so, there would be records kept and the permanent secretary would be informed of the director of the position. In any event, it was a general practice for the if the minister wished to deal directly with the head of department, it was a practice for him to have both, to summon both the permanent secretary and the head of department. I inquired if the I also asked him about raised the problem of coordination within each ministry and commented that matters would appear to have been too complicated and compartmentalized. He said that they were implementing a new system in accordance with the Rajendra report. Under this scheme, duplication of files was avoided. Instead of both the department and the ministry office keeping one file, the department file came up to the ministry. The ministry wrote their minutes on it, took notes and wrote minutes on it. Once, then it went up to the minister, and once the decisions were made, the file went back to the department. I said that I had seen the salaries and card commission report on this point, and said that they had recommended a step involving even greater coordination. Thus, instead of each department keeping a separate establishments file and accounts file, that one unit in the ministry should handle all these sections for each and every department within the ministry. Straight away he said that this was not practicable. Some departments had huge budgets, and it was not feasible for the ministry to control several such departments. For instance, in the Ministry of Agriculture and Lands, there was the Irrigation Department, the Electrical Department, Surveys, Forest, Chief Valuers, and he reeled off some more names, and then also included some corporations. Even leaving aside his point was that even leaving aside the corporations, it was impracticable and impossible. For them to have one unit supervising one the account section of these departments. In any event, coordination was provided for by the fact that the permanent secretary was the chief accounting officer in the ministry, and as such, the chief accounting officer of each department. I took this cue and asked him whether Treasury control wasn't far too rigid. He said that it was rigid, previously rigid, but at the moment they had they were loosening their controls and their supervision, and in fact directives had been sent to this effect. It was in the process of being implemented. A change was being implemented. I asked what the situation had been previously, and he said previously the Treasury had had a stranglehold and had prevented development. It was in fact a continuation of the colonial system. This treasury control was a continuation of the colonial system and had not been geared to developmental purposes. This was being rectified now. I asked whether under the previous system, though the permanent secretaries were chief accounting officers, controls and intervention was such that they tended to pass the buck to the Treasury itself. He concurred wholeheartedly and said, comment said that they were merely, the permanent secretaries were merely a post office. but the situation was being changed now. And I inquired whether it wasn't about time that the financial regulations and were simply and other regulations were simplified and codified. And I think he said that regulations were being loosened. And they, I'm afraid, I cannot recall.